good evening, morning, daytime, whatever. It could be 3 a.m. for all I know. I don't know what time you're listening to this. I'm Michael from Out of Many Things, and I'm here with...
Tom. There's always
a bit of a delay every episode. Every episode.
I feel like I should be copying. 3 second delay as far as Mike's concerned, because of the internet.
Yes, and I am here with Tom.
Tom.
Because I am Mike. And we are children's cartoon characters. Today we are going to be talking about travel and holidays. I mean, Tom, a lot of your travel has not really been a holiday, but I suppose you can still shed some light on these destinations, can't you?
Of course, yes. No, I've happened to do a lot of travelling for work purposes, but I have done a bit of travelling for pleasure and leisure in the past as well. Not necessarily at the same time.
He's a man of leisure, would you believe it? Well, how many places have you been to in the last year? How many countries have you visited in the last year?
Well, let me give me a quick second. I've got up
I
my
feel
Google
like
Maps.
You are not going to represent our average listener in terms of time spent in other countries.
Well, all time is quite good on Google Maps, but 2017 we have Germany, the Netherlands, Belgium, Japan, South Korea, China, and America, Texas. And Maryland. So I've actually done America twice this year as well.
Is this just in 2017?
That's in 2017.
You have been to more countries than there have been months.
Yes, that's about par for the course. I travel roughly every fortnight, roughly, for work at the moment.
I feel like if we were going to make a comparison to the amount of time you spend in other countries, the most apt one would be comparing it to the amount of time Donald Trump spends golfing and or tweeting.
Yeah, I suppose. I mean, it does depend on the week as to as to how long I'm spending in a place. So things like China and Japan, obviously, because it's for work, I will be out there for a whole week. And when it's somewhere closer, I might only be there for like a day. I have done a few day trips to places like Dusseldorf or whatever, because it's just been a work thing. They need me there, and there's no point in me staying overnight if I can get a plane back that evening.
So when you go to somewhere like Japan, how much time do you generally get to explore, you know, that you're not spent analysing an MRI machine?
I was fortunate enough both times I've been to Japan to get some of a weekend there. So that meant I was actually able to spend some time visiting my brother who lives out there at the moment and various friends I have out there. But on the weekdays, you know, it's more than an 8-hour day normally.
Do you want to know how many countries I have been to in 2017?
Is it the UK?
Yeah, I've not left the UK. Last time I went abroad was roughly a year ago. I went to Granada. Have you been to Granada?
I have not been to Granada.
I cannot recommend it enough. The people are very friendly. They're happy to help you learn a little bit of Spanish. And La Alhambra is one of the most staggering things I've ever seen.
I've played the board game, but I have not seen the place.
It is enormous. It can house an entire town. You could siege it and just... there's one side you can attack it from, and it's just full of walls. The other side, sheer cliffs, and there's miles of land inside it. I swear, just for farming and gardening, and it's mind blowing how big and beautiful it is. And the best thing about it, it was home to squatters for decades.
Yeah,
like it was just not. The government did nothing with it. It wasn't a heritage site. It wasn't a tourist site. It was just an old ruin that people were squatting in.
Right. Okay.
That blows my mind. Can you imagine that in the UK? Oh, no, I'm just going to hang out here in Cardiff Castle. Don't worry about it. So where do you live, Cardiff? Really? Whereabouts in Cardiff? The castle. I'm sorry, what? It just wouldn't happen here.
No, yeah, I mean, that's true. I mean, it's not like you're wandering past Stonehenge. You're just like, who are all those people with tents? Oh, it's just some druids. I mean, that only happens once a year.
So what is your favourite place in the world?
That is a tough question. It depends on what you're going for. I think Japan is probably the most interesting place I've been. Tokyo is a very interesting city. It's as lively as London is, but it's also full of lots of nerdy things that you just can't get in London. I went to the Pokemon Center when I was there, which was cool. Lots of giant model Pokemon, as well as obviously a very good purchasing opportunity if you are a massive nerd like I am. I also managed to go to a cat cafe, where there are so many charging points you wouldn't believe. It's very quiet as well. Those are quite nice. And obviously being able to pet as many cats as you like is pretty cool.
So cat cafe. I don't understand. I don't understand why you feel the need to go to Japan to visit a cat cafe when there's one in Manchester.
There is now one in Manchester. I was in Japan and I was trying to do as many Japanese things in a weekend as possible with my brother showing me around.
Yeah.
It was just something we passed and I needed to charge my phone.
Does your brother live there?
Yes, my brother's currently teaching English as a foreign language out there.
I see. He is a sensei. Okay, so Japan, I imagine the culture difference is enormous.
It is and it isn't. I think there's something to be said for island nations who had an empire that somehow makes them incredibly polite based on my two data points of the United Kingdom and Japan. But yeah, it is different. There is a lot of bowing and they're more polite than we are. Maybe we were once that polite, but they're definitely very polite. It's also mixed in with the high technology you kind of see and also a kind of 80s feeling. A lot of stuff is just still there that was a long time ago. I think there's less modern buildings than you might get in the UK, but that's because they've been built to last earthquakes. And so the ones that have survived stick around. And that's probably around the time, while I don't follow it exactly, that's probably around the time I imagine they were starting to perfect that kind of technology. So there's a lot of it feels very much like you might expect from having seen anime or video games. It was surprisingly like that. But there's also
lots of vending machines.
Yeah, vending machines everywhere, which is good because it's very warm and you'll be very thirsty. So it's good that you can...
How many odd vending machines did you see?
I didn't see any of the ones you're alluding to, like underwear or anything like that. I saw only three or four drinks brands.
But they have beer, don't they? Beer vending machines.
You can get beer in vending machines, but I didn't see one explicitly when I was there. Yeah. I saw there's a few companies, I can't remember all of them off the top of my head. There's Ichiban, who make Kirin Ichiban, which is a beer, and you see a lot of those on the train stations.
I like Kirin Ichiban. It's a good beer. It's very cold, very refreshing, very sharp, fresh flavour.
Yeah, it's very nice, but it's not the only thing that company does. It does all sorts of soft drinks as well.
Does it have a mascot?
I didn't know that until I went there. Not that I'm aware of, but again, I wasn't really looking.
I've been reasonably informed that Japan, everything needs a mascot or it simply won't be sold. I believe police forces have mascots, fire services have mascots, hospitals have mascots. Apparently everything comes with a mascot in Japan. I am, of course, working on second-hand information, but apparently it's just par for the course.
A lot of things do have mascots, but I don't know. I mean, I didn't watch a advert for Ichiban when I was there. I just saw their machines everywhere. And they're often next to a machine run by Yakult or another company like that. So there's always...
I see.
There are a lot of those things around. And a big thing in them they would have, as well as like your general soft drinks, they have a lot of unsweetened tea, black and green tea available, which I like because I like tea.
That's the correct way to serve tea.
It is, but this is cold tea in a machine. If you're going there for the first time,
that
you
is
presumably
not the correct
expect
way
it to be
serve
sweetened,
tea.
Yes. And I think Americans in particular would be shocked because they really like their sweet iced tea.
Yes. Cold tea is not the correct way to serve tea.
They also do a lot of coffee in the same machines, cold black coffee and cold lattes in the same machines. There's a thing called Pocari Sweat, which is kind of like their equivalent of Lucozade. It's an isotonic sports drink that looks just like salt water. and it's called Pocari Sweat. I know a lot of my friends, when they went out to Japan, had a lot of that because it was the height of summer and I went a different time of the year, so it was a bit cooler.
Did they have anyone explain what the word sweat means? Did anyone translate that word for them before they branded?
You're never quite sure with Japanese products like that. They like a lot of English words, just in general. So there's a lot of English words in their advertising and stuff, because it seems cool and new and edgy.
Yeah, I saw some Japanese YouTubers commenting on this when there was a whole series of React videos, and they did some to some Japanese music. And they had a few Japanese YouTubers on there, and they said, so why do they do this? And they just went, it sounds cool. And you had a lot of Americans theorizing why they think they do it. It just comes down to, it's cool. It's considered cool in Japan to throw in English words.
They love English words, and in the same way that in kind of Victorian times, there was a lot of kind of Eastern culture was seen as exotic and rare, and was they'd have like exhibitions in London. I believe that's how Gilbert and Sullivan wrote The Mikado. They actually just went and saw an exhibition on Japan in the middle of London. And they wrote everything based on that, which is why it's a little bit racist, as were a lot of Victorian things.
So apparently everybody was a little bit racist even before the internet.
Yes, indeed they were. Probably more so because, you know, you didn't get to used to these things from abroad. But yes, over there, there's a kind of fetishization is the wrong word. There is definitely there's an appeal of the exotic if you are a white man.
So we've talked about your favourite place. What is the worst place you've ever been? And is it Birmingham?
No, I quite like Birmingham. You went to university near there, so actually I saw Birmingham quite a lot. And, you know, it's not bad. Worst place I have been.
Can you say that twice? Like, is that something that can come out of your mouth twice?
There's not much wrong with Birmingham. What much wrong with Birmingham? I'm going to really annoy you when I say it's a bit like Manchester.
That shopping centre is one of the ugliest buildings I've ever seen in my life.
Well, the new Bullring is quite nice and shiny. It's full of stuff.
It looks like someone's got some Play-Doh, just mushed it a bit and stuck thumbtacks in it.
Well, I've not really ever seen it from outside, because you just kind of get into it and then you're inside it the whole time. Oh, God.
It is.
I have seen bits of it from outside, because I went to have breakfast outside at once, but I didn't really look at it much because I was busy eating a nice full English, and that took away most of my attention, really.
I would love to meet the architect who designed the Bullring, mainly so that I could sit there and yell at them for about 25 minutes.
Yeah.
It's just wrong. Whoever designed that and thought that was a good idea, I've got no idea. So what is the worst place you've been if it's not Birmingham?
I'm trying to think, really.
It could be anything. It could be the food, could be the weather, could be the people.
I think worst experience, and this was a work trip and that somewhat colours the experience, was China. And that's because I didn't get to see anything interesting. I landed at Shanghai Airport on a Monday morning, having been up all night, as far as my body was concerned. I went to the train station. I went on a maglev. That was cool. Took 6 minutes to travel in from the airport. And that was really cool, at 300 kilometers an hour. But I was really tired, so I probably didn't appreciate that as much as I'd like. I was in Shanghai, and I go to the train station, and I had to queue. There's like 40 queues, loads of people queuing. You have to show all your ID and everything to book a ticket, regardless of who you are. And then had to wait around for like 2 hours to get a train, because they're all booked, because so many people getting the train. Which, you know, that was a logistics problem on my part, but it kind of coloured me somewhat towards the rest of the experience. And then I spent the rest of Monday asleep recovering from jet lag.
Is the smog as bad as people say?
I didn't really notice much smog. It was...
Maybe that's in Beijing.
Yeah, in Beijing, maybe. I was in Suzhou, which is outside of Shanghai. It's about a 2.5 hour drive. So it's almost like flying to Shanghai to go there is like flying to London to go to Manchester. Assuming the traffic's good.
Okay.
And then, yeah, the hotel was quite nice. It purported to be a 5-star hotel, and various people I met said, really, it's a 4-star hotel. But having not been in many 5-star hotels, I couldn't really comment. It was very large, and it looked very Chinese, and it had several restaurants and a spa and everything. I managed to use the gym once because I was so busy working while I was out there. So that somewhat colored my impression of the place. I was there doing, you know, 9 in the morning to 9 at evening days and just sleeping. So... it was the worst experience, but that doesn't necessarily mean China itself is bad. I'm sure if you go to the Great Wall or something like that, it's lovely.
Is that the only place you've been to in China, then?
That is the only place I've been to in China, and I've only been to China once.
Okay. So I've only been to a few places, mostly on holidays, mostly as a child or teenager. I've been to a couple of places in Spain. I went to Costa del Sol. I went to Granada recently. I've been to Turkey a couple of times. I don't know if you've ever been to Turkey.
I've never been to Turkey. I'd be intrigued to go there, though probably not right at the moment.
Let's not get into the politics of Erdogan, lest we be assassinated or beaten brutally by some bodyguards. But it does have an interesting heritage site. Pamukkale, I'd probably pronounce that completely wrong, has a, as far as I remember, an almost calcium drip, like a series of strange rock formations created by calcium flowing out of a spring. And the spring has fizzy water naturally. It's a very odd sensation to get into a hot spring that is fizzy, with all those little bubbles.
That sounds really interesting, yeah.
It is, and you can lie there and you float very easily because of the, as odd as it sounds, the bubbles create a little extra lift. The only shame is that where you see a lot of these pictures where it's very white, it has to be the correct lighting for it to look like that, because naturally, like any sort of calcium formation, it looks dirtier than that up close. But it's definitely an interesting thing to visit. My other trip that I'm making soon is I'm going to Malta in 2.5 weeks, which I've not been. Have you ever been to Malta?
I've not been to Malta, but clearly it sounds like we're going to have a follow-up episode where you tell us about your experiences.
Well, I'm going there with some family and my lovely girlfriend. It's definitely got some interesting naming themes. I mean, you've got a place called Victoria on an island called Gozo. There's a lot of contrast because it's been occupied by so many different places, so I'm definitely interested to learn some of the history there. I'm also really interested to see how its economy functions, to be honest, because it makes me wonder how people live their entire lives there. I mean, how easy is it for people to fall out of work? How do you keep everybody doing something that generates revenue? I would imagine the majority of it is simply tourism-based. I mean, how many places in the world do you think would just collapse if not for revenue generated elsewhere being spent there as tourism?
I don't really know, not being an economist, but There are definitely some places that are like that, and you know, the tourism is such an embedded part. Now, if you took it away instantly, they would have collapsed. But if it was over many years, I'm sure people always, life finds a way, as they say.
Many years, they may replace it with something. Yeah, they may replace it with something over a long period of time. So where are you going next?
Where am I going next? I don't actually have any trips on the cards yet, although I'm sure I will end up going somewhere in the next few weeks for work. I just don't know where it will be.
So where have you not been to that you would like to?
I would like to go to Africa in general. There are places like Egypt, etc., that have a lot of interesting history, and I think I would enjoy that, although I'm not sure how well I would deal with the heat. I want to do more of Eastern Europe and places like Romania. I know a few Romanian people, and their countryside sounds lovely. Go and see if we can find any vampires in Transylvania and all the other stereotypical things you presume we do in Romania. There's also I don't know if you saw this after the referendum, there was a Romanian Adopt a Remainer campaign where they had a website. It was a tourism advert from
that, yes.
Romania, I think mostly from the city of Cluj. But it was quite interesting. I'll see if I can find that to put in the show notes. It's an interesting place from what I've heard. I'd like to go and see it for myself. As I say, I have a Romanian friend, and one of my friends is dating a Romanian as well. So I'm sure there's an opportunity there to go with someone who knows the area and speaks the language. Although I believe most people out there in the kind of touristy places will speak English as well. One of the fortunate things about being English is that luckily a lot of people want to speak our language, which makes travel a lot easier.
It's another perk of being an island-bound ex-empire nation, isn't it?
It's one of those privileges we have, and I don't think a lot of people think about it. The idea that they'd have to learn a language and go abroad and just shout loudly and someone will probably understand. That's not the best way to go about it, but I would always recommend learning at least a few phrases wherever you go. But maybe we'll do a travelling tips podcast later on.
Yeah, for all of its flaws, imperialism has generated a very widely shared language.
Yes, we're fortunate that we happen to have fallen on the right side of that. I do, as I say, I do try and learn a few little phrases when I go somewhere. Please and thank you is always worth having. You can generally get by with a lot of pointing and please and thank you, even if you don't know the language at all. As long as you can read numbers, because even in Asian countries that have a different alphabet, they tend to use Arabic numerals.
So in terms of travel advice, I mean, when you've been traveling, do you tend to book your own trips or do work book them for you?
It is a mixture. We used to have, there's a secretary in the office who's like general office secretary, and she would normally do all the kind of booking on behalf of everyone. But basically that almost became a full-time job at one point, and you know, that's not what she's been hired to do. So we then outsourced it to a travel agent. The travel agent will always get you something, but if you know an area and you've been to a hotel before, you might be able to get a better deal going directly to the hotel. Most of us who travel a lot with the company will have various points cards with different companies, and they might give you a deal that only you can get for a period of time. And then obviously it's cheaper for us to book it ourselves. So it very much depends on the trip, how last minute it is, who's available. I do quite like knowing where I'm going before I just get told it's this random hotel, because you might at least be able to form an opinion of it. It's not nice to end up in something like a travel lodge in the middle of nowhere when you could have stayed in a slightly nicer hotel for an extra £5 a night or something.
I don't know. Whenever I stay anywhere with work, it's always in the UK. It's always a Premier Inn, and it's known as the Purple Palace.
Well, they do have very nice beds. In fact, the one time I've stayed in a Premier Inn for work was after I landed about 6 p.m. at night, 7 p.m, something like that. And I was down near London. I had to go down to Guildford to get a rental car. And then I drove to Leeds to stay over that night because I had to be available 9 a.m. the next morning for a conference. And possibly the deepest I've slept in a long time, a mixture of tiredness and those amazing beds. And we're not sponsored at all by Premier Inn, but by Jove, are their beds good.
So, I mean, is there any particular agency, airline, or hotel chain you'd recommend to people? What have been some of your better experiences and perhaps some of your less favourable experiences? We've already mentioned Shanghai. So.
Yes, okay. So airline-wise, while they have their faults at times, I think in general British Airways, if you can afford them, and when you're travelling for business, you generally can, are worth going with, and they have a pretty good loyalty scheme. And that's through Oneworld, and there's a load of airlines through Oneworld, but basically you pick your first airline and then you get points on all Oneworld things, but you get your status with one particular airline. But the thing is, if you're traveling from the UK, Terminal 5 at Heathrow is pretty swish and it only flies BA. So with the exception of when their computer system fails.
I hear it's very well cleaned, Terminal 5 at Heathrow.
I think you're alluding to something in the news I've not heard about.
No, it's just... It's just part of what I do for
Oh, okay. Okay, I didn't realize that was related to your job. Yeah, with the exception of the time they all their computer systems failed, they've generally been very good. I've had a few free upgrades just when I've got there on the day. They've just bumped me up to the next class. Never business or first class, but, you know, it's always nice to get a bit more legroom, especially on the long-haul flights.
I don't know why you need legroom. You're short.
I am short, but you should see how small the legroom is. On most flights.
I don't fit on the local buses, right? If I get on the bus, I can sit at the front priority seats for old people and disabled people. I can sit in the one section of seat that has a bit of extra legroom because there's an emergency exit door. Or I can sit at the first seat that's raised behind the wheels because my knees aren't touching the seats in front. And those are my three options. If those three options aren't there, I have crushed kneecaps. Like, it's not right. Planes are even worse.
The space on planes is bad, and if you're going long haul, there is more space on long haul flights, but obviously if you go with the slightly more expensive airline, you will get more legroom in general. It does depend. Each airline has their own way of doing up the planes, but it still comes down to the individual flight. You might get an older plane instead of getting on a nice Dreamliner, because Dreamliners, oh, they're nice. I've not been on an Airbus A380, but I would love to. I know my manager's been on one of those, and they are amazing.
I'm used to flying on EasyJet or some such similar airline. Thompson, I believe, I've done a couple of times. You recommend BA?
Personally, yes. I've had a fairly good experience with BA.
You say if you can afford it. How much more expensive is it?
I mean, it depends. I mean, if you're going on a short trip somewhere like France, then it's always a question of weighing things up. I mean, EasyJet is horrible, but if you can get returned to somewhere for £25, I would be like, well, why don't you take EasyJet? Because you're only going to be on there for half an hour, an hour. A lot of the flights to nearby in Europe, you kind of go up and you come back down again, and it doesn't matter if you don't have a meal or if you have to pay for every extra. But I mean, there is something nice about getting on a BA flight when they're like, oh, here's your meal. Here's unlimited gin and tonics until you arrive, or unlimited red wine. It's pretty much unlimited at any rate. I would also probably recommend Lufthansa. They have pretty good meals if you like German food, which I happen to.
I don't know. German food tends to be the worst. Speaking of food, so you've travelled to various countries. Let's talk food. I'm a fan of Japanese. Some of the few Japanese dishes I've had, although it's possible they've been anglicised. I like my ramen bowls. I don't tend to like udon noodles, but I do tend to like most other noodles. Udon noodles are a bit too thick and chewy. Yeah, I like donburi, that kind of thing. Chinese food, short of Sichuan, I probably only had anglicised Chinese food.
Yes. I think based on my one experience, that definitely seems to be the case. Anglicised Chinese food, I think, has a lot more salt and things in it than you get out in China itself. Because, you know, there's no way people could live off Chinese takeaway every day and not just die. I mean, it can be tasty, but there's a lot of salt and a lot of fat in all of those things. And when you actually have the food in China, it's much more balanced.
It's one way to solve an overpopulation issue. Yeah. might be able to ignore things like a one-child policy if they just feed everybody sweet and sour every night. Yeah, let's hop along to food in other countries.
I'm always someone who's willing to try food abroad, and I've never really had a particularly bad experience. I've not felt well, but I don't necessarily think that is the food itself. That's always been a mixture of travel and things like that.
What's the weirdest thing you've tried to eat, then?
Weirdest? Possibly the weirdest thing I've had is sea urchin sushi, and that was only very recently in Japan. And it's like the insides of a sea urchin. You don't eat the outside of it. It's basically like a paste. It doesn't really have much taste to it, but I think if you had to say something out loud that sounds weird, that definitely is up there.
Yeah, I think the weirdest thing I've eaten is a chicken's heart, and that's slightly less weird than the inside of a sea urchin.
Yeah, and I think that's probably because we don't eat as much seafood over here as they do in Japan. And the reason sushi is so popular is nearly everywhere you go that's famous is a port. They have so much fresh fish over there.
Well, that's just the climate, the geography, isn't it? Japan is extremely steep mountains and densely populated coastal regions because the mountains aren't feasible to live on.
Yes, there is that. But I mean, considering we are an island nation who has a long tradition of naval exploits and fishing, I find it weird, and possibly this is just my own personal background, because neither of my parents are massively into seafood, and I always confuse them when I send them pictures of things like mussels that I know are quite popular in the rest of the UK. It's just my parents don't happen to like them.
There's an easy explanation for that, which is that we have significantly more grassland than they do. We have the space to rear cattle, to rear pigs, to rear all sorts of meat, and to grow all sorts of crops, and the Japanese don't. They do not have the terrain necessary to do so.
Space is at a premium there, but, you know, they still have pork and beef and everything like that as well.
But that is a key factor in this difference in diet.
I can imagine in the past when it was a lot harder to, oh, I can go out on my own boat and catch a load of fish and now I can feed my family for several weeks.
There have in the past been periods of British history where it was compulsory to eat fish at least once a week, by law.
I have heard of this.
You're aware of that?
I've heard of this, but I think it's one of those kind of passing interesting facts that I've forgotten about.
So it revolved around the fact that we were a naval power. And one of the ways in which we kept our navy funded was that the navy would double as a fishing fleet.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
would bring fish back. Everybody would be forced to buy and eat fish once a week by law. And that would fund our navy. That's where the British sort of chowder came from.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
Fish chowder.
I was going to say, the only kind of chowder I know is clam chowder from America. So I've never really associated that with us. But that's interesting. I didn't know any of that.
Or the food. We've talked briefly about Japan, Japanese food, Chinese food. When you say the Chinese food had a lot less salt and sugar, etc., what were you fed?
So my actual evening meals, I had been reliably informed by a colleague that they had the best pizza they'd ever had in the hotel I stayed in. So I had the pizza.
That does not sound like Chinese
food. No, it does not sound like Chinese food, and it wasn't. It was an Italian pizza restaurant in the middle of this hotel, and it was pretty good, but I have had better pizza in Italy itself, in Rome.
So when you say that, oh no, yeah, my experience of Chinese food in England is vastly different to my experience of Chinese food in China. Your experience of Chinese food in China is that you ordered takeaway pizza.
It was not takeaway pizza. It was a sit-down restaurant. But that was only on the first night, having been told by my colleague. It was still pizza. My colleague assured me it was the best pizza she had ever had. So I went and tried it. And it was a pretty good pizza.
So I think we should go on holiday to Germany next year and we should order sushi.
I mean, the Germans do like their sushi.
And then we should go to Italy and make sure that we have the finest kimchi.
Hmm. Kimchi's pretty good, actually. We'll get back to that in a second. But yes, all joking aside, I did have pizza on the first night there, and I did go to a KFC at one point when I couldn't find anything reasonable at lunchtime because I was not feeling well while I was in China, which didn't help. But I did make sure to go to the Chinese restaurant the one day it was open in the hotel for an evening.
Tom, meal. We're in China. What do you fancy? Chicken.
Well, the thing was, at lunchtime, if I didn't get to the canteen, which I didn't manage to do on any day because it closed at about midday and I was busy working, I had to walk about 1.5 kilometres to the Students' Union of a nearby university where there was a KFC, a McDonald's, a load of things entirely in Chinese with no translation that I couldn't understand and I didn't want to randomly point at. And then a place called 85 Degrees, which was a coffee house that also did like pastries and sandwiches and things like that, but in a kind of Chinese style. So that was interesting as lunch goes.
So how far do we think you have to travel, right, to reach somewhere that has not been f***ed by the giant greasy fast food the USA?
I mean, the middle of the Sahara Desert, maybe? Antarctica?
Right, you know what, I'm Googling this. I bet there's a f***ing KFC in the Sahara Desert or something, or a McDonald's.
There probably aren't any in North Korea, but that's probably it.
Yeah, right, well, I'm Googling fast food in the Sahara. Woo! That is not the Sahara Desert, that is Madame Tussauds. What are you doing? Right, Google has failed me.
Oh, maybe there isn't.
My Google foo needs extra work.
In China, I did manage to go and have a Chinese meal. I wasn't particularly adventurous because I have limited Chinese is an understatement. I can't speak any Chinese. When I was there, I ended up having duck pancakes and some vegetables.
Are you sure you can't say ni hao?
Ni hao, yes, I can say that. And I can say su jiao and places like that. And I'm probably murdering this to any Chinese listeners listening. I did try that. And the breakfast there, so normally when you go to most places, their breakfast in the morning is an approximation of a full English and an approximation of continental food. And depending on where you are, the quality of those two things gets better.
How do you approximate continental breakfast? It's a pastry and some fruit. Like, how do you get that wrong? Oh, I'm sorry, it's a muffin and a carrot. Close enough.
Well, you know how if you get a continental breakfast in the UK, it's a bit rubbish?
Yes.
Basically, that is what I'm saying. When you go to Europe, a continental breakfast is stellar, regardless of where you end up. In the hotel I was in China, they had an interesting mix of trying to have a few pastry things, but their pastries were just done differently. It's hard to put my finger on exactly what was wrong about them, but I suppose it's a bit like, instead of having a proper Danish pastry on the streets of Copenhagen, you've gone and bought something from, you know, a cheap supermarket in the UK. So it's that kind of difference. It was a difference in quality, as opposed to, they had the right items, but they weren't up to the standard you would expect for that particular thing from a purportedly 5-star hotel. Obviously the Chinese things they had there were kind of interesting, so, and that changed from day to day. So there's one day I just got sliced duck breast at breakfast, like cold duck breast, and that was really nice. And they had rice bowls and things, and you could make various meals up like that.
With duck, you do have to cook it correctly. If you cook duck badly, it is disgusting.
Yeah, no, that was quite nice. Like a cold cut of duck in the morning. I don't tend to be particularly adventurous because traveling, there's always something interesting to eat in the evening. So at breakfast, I tend to basically have scrambled eggs and bacon or just cereal because I don't have too many calories in the morning.
Duck is quite a fatty bird, isn't it?
It is. Yeah.
Duck is quite a fatty bird. I reckon this is because ducks are really lazy. I mean,
it's probably because they need to stay warm.
If you watch chickens, right? Chickens run round like mad. They're after whatever looks like food. If it fits in the mouth, having it. I don't know if you've seen Moana, but they're all like that chicken from Moana.
Voiced by Alan Tudyk.
Ducks just paddle, mate. They don't even swim. They may as well have a rubber ring, right? They're like that fat guy in the pool with a rubber ring, right? And he's trying to reach the edge of the pool to go get his ice cream, and he's just waddling his little legs. The difference is their legs are webbed. Like that is the equivalent of a duck, and that is why a duck is a fatty bird. It just floats. It doesn't swim.
Well, it will aid buoyancy, a bit of fat. You know, if ever I fall off a boat in the middle of the Atlantic, I will last slightly longer than skinny people.
Unless those skinny people are Michael Phelps.
He would still freeze quicker, I would like to think, but you know.
Yeah, but he also might reach the shore.
I mean, 1,000 miles to America and 2,000 miles to the UK, he might be pushing it. Anyway, I feel we've got somewhat sidetracked from
that. I choose to believe in Michael Phelps. So I did ask you where you'd like to go that you haven't, and I think we actually may have skipped that question.
I did mention Africa and Eastern Europe, and we discussed Romania and everything. So
Africa's a big place. That's kind of like when Americans say they want to visit Europe.
Yes. In fact, it's worse than that because Africa is considerably larger than the majority of Europe. As I said, I did touch on briefly, I would like to go to Egypt because there's a lot of history there, but I'm not sure I'd be able to deal with the heat.
Well, you could definitely get your KFC.
Yes, I'm sure you could get KFC. And then I'd probably want to go somewhere further south, somewhere like Kenya, where you could go on maybe a safari. Like, it's just one of those things I've never done. And while I'm not a massive fan of zoos and things, when they're in their natural habitat, I feel it might be fine.
What's your number one safari animal?
Probably be pretty impressed to just see lions, you know, lounging about doing their own thing. I imagine they spend most of their time sleeping, but, you know, lions are pretty impressive animals.
I would like to see elephants just out there in the wild having fun.
I think that would be pretty cool.
Like, they're just enormous.
I've seen elephants in Thailand, but they were playing football, which is not their normal habitat.
Actually, elephants are the best, man. They play football. I've seen videos of elephants painting other elephants.
Yes, well, there was a painting elephant, I believe, when we were in Thailand, but we didn't stay around to see it because we were too busy riding other elephants, which is an interesting experience, actually.
They're amazing. Where would I like to go?
Thailand is definitely a place I would recommend if you're looking for suggestions.
Yes, I would like to go to Thailand. I would like to go to Japan. I would like to go on safari. There are parts of the US I would like to visit. I think I would like to visit a few parts of the US just to see how different they are.
Which parts in particular? Because I've been to some, so I can give you my brief thoughts on those.
I've always loved a lot of Californian culture in terms of skateboarding, surfing, a lot of the punk rock. But, I mean, you contrast that with New York. I don't think I'd enjoy New York anywhere near as much as most people. I've got no interest in Vegas, in fact. I wouldn't mind going to New Orleans.
Yeah, I don't know what there is to do in New Orleans. I know it's... has a lot of historical relevance and there's a big musical culture there, but I don't know. I couldn't name any particular site to go see in New Orleans.
I mean, the Great Lakes, they'd be amazing to visit. Yellowstone, anywhere in the North America, the North America has an absolutely amazing landscape, and I'd love to see some of that.
Yeah, I mean, I would love to do New York just because there's so. I mean, it's the equivalent draw, I think, to how Americans view London. It's not necessarily as quaint, but it's full of things you've seen on TV, basically.
And I think that's one reason that I don't want to go there. I mean, I don't like London. I don't see why I'd like New York. It's just the same, but bigger and more and busier. There's nothing there that makes me want to visit.
It's the kind of thing I think I would do as either a city break, like a long weekend kind of thing, or I would plan a trip to America that had that as like the starting point.
I think maybe I would go to New York if I had a lot of spare cash to spend, like just for shopping.
I know people who went there just for shopping when I was a kid, and that seemed ridiculous to me. And it still kind of does.
I think your friends as a child were wealthier than my friends as a child.
I have a few friends who are quite wealthy.
Southerners!
We won't get started on the school I went to. Can cover that in another episode.
Oh dear.
In the States, one thing I have been able to do was I was very fortunate to do a lot of DC on one of my work trips, and it was actually just after Trump's inauguration. So that was interesting to walk around and just see them, kind of like the stuff still being packed up. And I've got a lot of nighttime photos. I'll see if I can put some in the show notes of the Lincoln Memorial, the Washington Monument, and the Capitol building all lit up at night. Didn't get a good photo of the White House that time, but I got another one on an earlier trip where, because I had to go from a Washington airport, even though I was in Baltimore, I could either get a stupidly long Uber around Washington, or I could get up early, get the train into Washington, and have a proper look around and do all the touristy things. And the big thing, I think, that would shock the average British person is how much space there is between the famous things. It's a good few miles walk. You get like 6 or 7 famous landmarks in the same amount of space in London. You would have gone from Buckingham Palace through Trafalgar Square, down the South Bank. You know, you'd have enjoyed all, like, pretty much every famous thing in central London in the same space as like the 6 or 7 famous buildings in DC. That's probably an understatement. There are a lot of famous buildings in DC.
That's America in general, isn't it?
There's so much
space. The sheer amount of land space they have compared to us. You know, as a result, you get much bigger living spaces, much bigger houses, much bigger everything. Like, you get bigger portions of steak because they can grow bigger cows because they've got bigger fields of whatever cows are eating.
Just steroids.
Probably other cows in America, to be honest. I wouldn't be surprised if they make them fight each other and simply eat the loser.
Yeah. When I was out there, it was interesting to see they were advertising no antibiotics for all their chickens, as if I don't know what the
that's an achievement.
The local problem has been there, but clearly it's been a big deal. There's been all these chickens having antibiotics. Talking about ridiculously large things, I also went to Texas earlier in the year, and man, Houston is huge. Like, Houston is London sized, but everything is flat. So when you look across London, there's all these skyscrapers, and there are some tall buildings in the center of Houston, but the average building around there is, you know, a story high, 1.5 stories high. And at Brooks, because they have all that space to spread outwards instead of upwards.
So when you say a story, do you mean like 2 floors or just a single floor, like a bungalow?
I mean, there was a lot. I didn't see any houses out there, but what I'm talking about is a lot of like strip malls and things like that that were like 1-story buildings or like 1.5 story height, because they would be, you know, like a big shopping centre or something. But yeah, everything was a lot flatter. You could see a lot further. Like, you can't look across London and see the other side easily because there's stuff in the way, whereas it felt more like you could do that in Houston. And there were just massive freeways.
And the couple of places in America you've been, would you say the culture is massively different? How do people's attitudes differ? Because what I want to do is I want to go to America, and I want to go there 4th of July, and I want a bar crawl.
Yeah.
On the 4th of July, in full red coat regalia, waving a massive red flag. Now, I'm aware that in some parts of America, this would probably get me a round of applause and possibly a beer.
And in other places, it would definitely get you shot.
And in other parts of America, this would probably get me killed.
I mean, if you did that in New York, they'd probably just think you're part of the cast of Hamilton. But if you did it elsewhere, I probably wouldn't go down well in Texas. My experience in Texas was very good, and I know. Well, in fact, we both know a guy who wants to live
Booker.
Booker, who wants to move out there, and hopefully we'll be doing so soon. And he loved it out there. He was in a different part of Texas because obviously it's such a huge place.
Are you aware that when Booker was in Texas, he was accused of pretending to be English to pick up chicks?
That's brilliant. This is one cultural difference I noticed when I was in Baltimore and DC and Northern America. At least in that area, where there's presumably more tourists than I expect to get in Texas from abroad. The English accent, while noted, didn't necessarily cause comment. People occasionally, like, there was when I had to go sign in at the university I was visiting, the lady on the front desk, you know, while she's like taking a photo of you and printing your ID card, was having a chat with me, and she's like, "Oh, where are you from?" I'm not going to bother with an American accent. I'll completely screw that up. Let's start again. She was like, "Where are you from?" And I'd be like, I'm from London. She's like, "Oh, I would have thought you were from Australia," and things like that. Okay, fine. You didn't get the accent, but noticed I had an accent, was asking where I'm from, and that was kind of funny.
God, where would they think I was from?
But then when I arrived in Texas, again, it's a jet laggy flight. You're going, like, taking off lunchtime UK time, flying for 12 hours, and then it's like 5, 6 p.m. there. And I just needed some food, and then I was going to go to bed at what was like 8 p.m. over there and have a long sleep to catch up and get ready for the next day. And I walk into like the sports bar, and they had the Netherlands versus Puerto Rico's baseball game on. And I'm actually quite like baseball. I don't follow it, but I will happily watch it when it's on.
Is it just rounders but bigger?
Yes, arguably. Sorry, can you hear a drumming noise?
No.
It's fireworks. Someone is having early 4th of July fireworks, by the sounds of it, in the wrong country. Which is kind of apt America. In the back of our talk about America. But yes, so I landed here. I went to the sports bar and I sat down. There weren't many people in there. Presumably, you know, Monday night, it's not particularly busy. I doubt lots of Americans are super enthused in the Netherlands or Puerto Rico, trying to be a state. They're probably more interested in that. The Netherlands baseball team, probably not top of their list to watch. But while I was there, I come in and I'm like, I just want a burger. I have a look at the menu and the guy comes over. He's like, what do you want? And I'm like, can I just, what beers do you have? You know, just asking. And he was like, are you British? And I'm like, yes. And he's like, just say anything. And I was like,
anything.
Completely put on the spot. And it's so hard. You know, it's like, words? I don't know what to say. Friendliest of almonds ever been to me. I know there's a slightly different culture with waiting staff over there. It's because they're being tipped. There is a tendency for them to be overly nice.
That would get on my nerves, I think. I think that's maybe a British thing. So British people like to be left alone. The idea of a salesperson being helpful to me is fine, but them going out of their way to help me is irritating. Like, excuse me, sir, can I help you with this? Are you looking for anything in particular? No, you know what? I will come to you when I've picked the product I want or when I need help and have a question. People coming in my face to be helpful, I just find annoying. And I think a lot of Americans would find that utterly bizarre.
I think it's different depending on where you go. I mean, this guy felt particularly genuine because he was clearly interested in asking me a lot of things about the UK. So I think he must have had at the very least a passing interest, even if it's just because he's seen an episode of Downton Abbey, you know. Whereas other places you go, I think it very much, it depends. There's a certain frequency that doesn't annoy me. And then above that frequency, it can get annoying. And I've been to a few places like that. And I think it's actually generally the places that are a bit cheaper, the classier places, people won't come by quite as often because it's more of an experience. There's nicer music or something like that. But in the kind of cheaper places, you might get the waitress coming around a bit more often, like topping up your water, just even when you've just like had a few sips. And then it can feel a bit much.
So in terms of traveling and being British and the reaction you get to that, I have a close friend, almost a family member, who has, he spent a year in Portugal, he spent a year in Spain, he's travelled quite a lot, he's been to Eastern Europe several times, and he insists that him and my girlfriend, it's her brother, he says, whenever you go abroad and they ask you where you're from, say you're Irish. He says, the majority of places, you get a friendlier, warmer welcome if they think you're Irish than if they think you're English. Which is, it might just be his perspective, and it might be a series of Europe. But I think there is a somewhat anti-English sentiment in some parts of the globe.
Yes.
I don't think America is particularly one of them.
No, I think Americans are generally pro-Britain now. I mean, obviously, a long time ago, it was a very different thing. But nowadays, I mean, we speak English. That's generally a good way to get on with an American. And then we have a cute accent, as far as they're concerned. The same applies in Canada.
Well, you might. I don't know what they'd think of mine.
I honestly don't know. I definitely have, and I can, I have definitely put it on a bit more when I've been somewhere, especially if you hear someone say something like, I have Canadian cousins, and I was fortunate enough to go and see them when I was at university, and one of their friends had a party and was like, oh, I'm about to go off to London University. And I was, and they were like, oh yeah, this is our cousin. He's from London. And I was like,
did you suddenly turn into Dick Van Dyke?
No, not who I love.
Howdy, governor.
No. I'm definitely put on a slightly, speaking in the Queens, a bit more of a twang to just make it clear that I was from the original London and not London, Ontario. So, yeah, I think that's definitely a thing. I think in general, I've rarely come across someone who's been like, oh, bloody British people. But maybe that's just where I've been. In Europe, I do tend to try and speak the local language a bit more because I speak French, and I've tried to learn a bit of Dutch, and I'm learning German, so that kind of helps. Although I think the Germans quite like us, from the ones I've met. I've never really had a problem in France, but I try and speak French when I'm there.
See, I had a problem in France when I tried to speak French, because when you make a mistake, they will just laugh at you. I found that they're very open about their disdain for people speaking their language badly or not trying.
Yeah,
like you have to speak it, and you have to speak it well, otherwise you're a laughingstock. Which honestly is really similar to the English attitude, to be honest. Yeah. I mean, how many English people do you meet who will credit someone who's struggling with English for trying? They will just make fun of them for doing it badly, and it's ridiculous. These people are trying to learn a second language or speak a second language. It's more than most British people ever attempt to. To mock them is incredibly
ignorant.
Yeah, I mean, as Eddie Izzard says, like in the Netherlands, they speak four languages and they smoke weed. How do they have time? and that's the general impression. Yeah, that's the general impression I think a lot of British people have. I know quite a few people who, and I mean, people change their viewpoint throughout their lifetime, but I know people at school who are like, oh, what's the point in us doing French or Spanish at school? We don't need another language. We speak English and everyone speaks English. And weirdly, I've actually had that response from people in other countries when I've been there and I've told them I'm trying to learn the language or I've learned a few phrases. They're like, oh, why do you bother? You speak English. And I'm like, it is useful, but I'd feel rude.
Yeah, and you get Spanish people who will come to the UK for a couple of years in order to improve their English skills because it improves their job prospects back home.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing.
I think being able to speak multiple languages opens up avenues, even if it's not 100% fluent. I mean...
Oh, absolutely.
If you can speak another language, then you can always have the opportunity to move there. You'll pick up the words that are relevant to your job when you're there. Because especially if you do speak English to start with, most countries speak English enough, especially in the realms of business and science and education, that if you have that as a starting point and you pick up another language, it's worth going. And I would definitely encourage anyone who has the opportunity to spend any time abroad to do so. I've not been able to actually live abroad for a long period of time. I've just been able to visit, luckily, but I would definitely recommend it to anyone to, you know, realize that people elsewhere are basically not that much different from you and I. You know, everyone is pretty much the same everywhere, has the same wants and needs.
Yeah, moving on to like another subject. Is there anywhere in the world you absolutely have no interest in visiting?
I think there are places in the world I wouldn't choose to spend my money to go to, but I always feel like there's something interesting about going somewhere. I don't know anything about Afghanistan, let's put it that way. Not really. Nothing that I haven't, you know, if you discount stuff you've seen on the news because there was a war there.
The only people I know that have been to Afghanistan went there in a very specific professional capacity.
Yeah.
they don't have a lot of nice things to say about it. But that might be down to the circumstances and the time periods in which they're going.
So somewhere like that, I've never been. I don't know anything about the culture. I don't know if there's much to do there at the moment because it's been war-torn. That doesn't necessarily mean there's not something to do there. I'm generally not a fan of being in very hot countries unless I know there is somewhere very cold I can go and stay. Actually, I find it's almost the places on the edges that are worse. So like the south of France, for example, can get very warm, but because it's not as hot as, say, the desert, they might have less air conditioning.
Yeah, and it's actually worse to be indoors. Yeah.
Yeah. And in fact, that's the experience I had the one time I went to the south of France with my family, because I was just before I went off to university and I was promised, oh, yeah, there'll be cold tile floors you can lie on to keep yourself cool and there'll be air conditioning and stuff. There was no air conditioning. My brother and my bedroom had carpeted floors and I was so warm.
If you hypothetically had to move to another country permanently, which one would you choose?
Germany.
Germany.
Not even a second thought there. Germany is very similar in a lot of ways to the UK. I would miss my real ale, but they have a large range of beers. They have excellent food. They do Christmas better than us, in my opinion. A bit classier and with a bit more alcohol. Germany has two things that are quite close to my heart as well. Having visited Berlin several times, it's a lovely city. It's, depending on where you are in Berlin, parts of it do look a bit more run down than other cities in Europe.
Would you be proud to call yourself a jam donut?
Ich bin ein Berliner, yes, definitely. That was very nice as well. there's a lot of very good food. The only problem if I moved to Germany is I would probably end up incredibly fat. Although there is a lot of salad, maybe I'd just have to walk everywhere or something.
I think you might have the same problem with America.
I would definitely, no, in America I would just balloon. They put calories on everything. When I say that, I don't mean they're adding extra calories to everything. That may happen. But
now for an added sprinkle of calories.
But what they do is every single product you buy tells you the number of calories in it in big, massive letters outside of like restaurants. And most restaurants will have a menu that will tell you the calories as well. And I was actually really impressed by that when I went there because it's a bit more in your face than the system we have over here with the wheels. And they say, oh, one serving is only 2% of your daily calories, but one serving is like one minstrel instead of, you know, a whole bag, which is inevitably what you're going to eat. I think Germany be a place I'd want to move. I could get by in France, but I think I prefer Germany as a place. And as I was saying, Berlin, close to my heart, is a nice place. I've spent a fair amount of time and really enjoyed. And also they have the International Spieltag in Essen, which is a international board gaming convention that I was fortunate enough to go to last year and I'm hoping to go to again this year. And it was great. And being able to, you know, be a train ride away or a short drive would be really cool. So having to fly out there.
Awesome.
Is there anywhere you would move to if you had the option?
Because I've not visited a great many places, it's difficult to say where I'd move. I would consider certain parts of the US if I needed to.
Mm-hmm.
I would consider Canada.
Canada is actually quite nice. I mean, again, I have family up there, so I could see that if if push came to shove.
Yeah, I mean, I think I have extended family there, but not people I've met. But there is a... I mean, I'm a big rugby fan, as you know, and rugby is the fastest growing sport in America, and it's also a very growing scene in Canada. So I could get involved with that from a community perspective.
Yeah.
Although ice hockey, I'd be lynched for saying it, but I can't follow it. I can't even see the puck. It moves that quickly. And ice hockey, it amazes me that people can follow the game. The other problem I might have with Canada is, although the Canadian winter looks beautiful, my joints might not hold up.
That's fair.
Cold does negatively affect me. Australia, I could consider. I do have family in Australia. Mm-hmm. I've been told that I would probably enjoy the lifestyle down there very much.
Lots of beaches.
Apparently, they tend to cut out small talk a lot. They don't tend to beat around the bush. Everyone's very direct and to the point. All things that appeal to me.
Fair enough. What about New Zealand? It's quite close to the Aussies.
Yes, but I don't know if I could be anywhere where they're that good at rugby. It's just a pro.
You wouldn't become an All Black fan then if you went out there.
It's a bit cooler than Australia. Bit cooler than Australia. Bit more of a British climate. And I don't know if you've seen what they have instead of rats in New Zealand.
Is that capybaras?
Weta. Just Google this image, right, and then react to it audibly. W-E-T-A.
As in Weta Workshop. Yes. Yes, I know what you mean. But I don't think I've actually seen one other than their logo. Oh, yes. They're these monsters. Giant bug things. Yeah, they're really cool. I like those.
Do you know what? Do you know why they have them?
No, I don't. I don't know anything about it.
New Zealand does not have any native mammals. Not one.
Oh, so there's nothing to prey on them, so they've managed to grow nice and large.
Yep.
Cool.
And that is also why you got things like the kiwi bird. Flightless birds in abundance in New Zealand. Because there's no mammals to prey on the birds.
Yeah.
So the birds didn't need to fly to avoid them. So you ended up evolving flightless birds that feed on the insects. And you get weta instead of rats.
I hadn't made that connection before. I was aware of them having these large insects, and I knew it was... But I hadn't, in my head, I hadn't been like, they have no rats. I would have just assumed everywhere has rats.
The only mammals in New Zealand were brought there by humans.
Hmm. That's interesting.
It is. Now, I think one thing we would like, for if anyone listens to this, or I'm sure at least one person is going to listen to this, individual. Our sole individual listener, and anyone else. Where have you been? Is there anywhere you think we should go? Is there anywhere you think we should visit in the world? Is there anywhere you think we've given an unfair rap, or that we should avoid? I mean, that's possibly even more useful information than where should you go. Where should you not go? We would love to hear about some of your experiences and get some of that feedback. And, you know, if we get some comments, we can bring them up and mention them in the podcast and discuss some of the suggestions we've received.
Sorry, I'm just typing down, making sure I've got our list ready so we can draw something out of the hat.
Yes, you need to start putting this in the hat, though, instead of randomly generating a number, because it's not really the hat of many things if it's the Excel spreadsheet of many things.
Shh, don't tell them that. It's definitely a hat. I am definitely wearing a beret right now.
You are, right? And if you keep wearing these things and don't put anything in them, we are going to spend an entire podcast talking about you, which we almost did today.
Okay, well, yes, that's fair. What we'll do in the future then is we will definitely be printing out some of these. I believe, as we said last time, there are some categories we already have where they're in order, because there is a logical order where we need to discuss something first. But when that category comes up, we'll just do the first episode in that list. Other stuff is more random.
Yeah, so what we've done is we've created categories, and within those categories are topics. This enables us to randomize the subject we're discussing, but give it some groundwork. And then hopefully we can categorize these or introduce a filter on the website at the least, which allow you to sort by topic as well as by chronological order.
Yes, there'll be category. Every episode will have its category assigned to it. So last time would have been in the politics category. This time comes under travel. And then we have a variety of other categories. And we will be putting up a Google form on the website.
Yeah, we would love to take some suggestions. We don't need to know what we're talking about. We can ramble. I can ramble. I can chat absolute gibberish if I need to.
Yes.
It might not be interesting. It might not be thrilling. I can't guarantee it will even be funny. But I can definitely talk. Words are a thing. I can produce them. They can keep coming out of my mouth.
And I can react. So if we end up an episode with Mike talking a bit more, that's probably what's happened there. But yes, we'll be putting into the show notes a link to a Google form.
Today was more Tom talking because he's done more travel than me, but it's going to be bouncing back and forth. And depending on the subject, it's entirely possible one of us is going to have more to say than the other, and we can draw those questions out. Hopefully you're enjoying the show, you're enjoying the podcast, and you're enjoying some of the things we have to say. Politics and travel have been some very different subjects, although they are extremely intertwined, geopolitically speaking. One definitely affects the other.
But, you know, this has been a travel-focused podcast. It's been a where have we been podcast, and where are we going next? And where the podcast is going next, well, that is what we're going to find out when we draw the next one. So, I'm going to request that Tom inserts a drum roll here.
Masculinity.
Speaking of the hat, last week you were wearing a wizard hat, Tom. What are you wearing today?
I am wearing a Sago-branded scouting beret.
And at the risk of being a little saucy, what else are you wearing today, Tom?
Just a dressing gown.
Tom is in a dressing gown and a beret. I assure you, he looks like the most home-comforted guerrilla warfare specialist you've ever seen. It's a little bit Dad's Army, a little bit LOLO. He looks like he doesn't realise the war ended a long time ago. Or that he'd know how to fight it if he did. But he is a scoutmaster, so he would probably do better than I.
And it's okay, Mother. I am wearing socks.
Ooh, saucy.